This episode of Travel Today with Peter Greenberg is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial.
It's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one travel news journalist. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, your travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here, and welcome to the podcast that's done from a different location around the world every single week. One day Canada, the next day Thailand, then New York, London. You just never know. This week we come to you from
the Azamara Pursuit as we're sailing from Southampton in England all the way literally around the bend and up into Norway and Scandinavia on board their new Pursuit. Joining me now, I'm honored to be with the captain of this ship, Captain Carl Smith. And I can almost ask every captain of every ship, so I'm going to ask you, this is not your first ship.
No, I've actually been at sea for 28 years now.
What was your first ship?
It was a Shell oil tanker called the Eberna. I joined it when I was 16 years old in Venezuela.
Wow. That's a history.
It's a long time ago now.
Yeah. And by the way, when you're on one of those tankers, you're not just showing up at a port. You're waiting to get into the port.
I was 16 when I joined my first ship, and it was quite an experience. I grew up a farm boy, and at 16, I flew out to Venezuela, joined this ship where I had to work sort of 15, 16 hours a day, a man's job. It was quite an experience.
And then?
So I spent 7 years with Shell. I passed all my exams with Shell. I passed my third officer's exams, second officer's exams, then chief officer, which is second in command. From there, I moved on to ferries closer to home. I worked for the Isle of Man steam packet. I'm from the Isle of Man, so that
wow.
was something.
Would these roll on, roll off? Or
they had a selection of different yeah. ferries, so roll on, roll off. We had high-speed craft, some of them doing 37 knots.
And you were operating in seas that were not always friendly.
The Irish Sea is very rarely friendly.
I know. And then?
So from there, I did a variety of things. I worked for Fifes on banana boats, bringing bananas from Suriname to the UK. Then in 1999, so 10 years after I started, I passed my captain's license and I started working on passenger ships.
And what was your first passenger ship?
It was a German ship called the Albatross.
Interesting title.
Well, the Germans don't have the same traditions as we do, so this was called the Albatross because they travel. it was one of the oldest ships afloat at the time, but that was my first passenger vessel.
And then? I got to get the whole history here.
Okay, so I worked for several smaller lines, working through a variety of positions. I had to start at the bottom again when I was joined passenger ships. I worked my way back up to second in command, on this ship.
On this ship?
On this ship.
When it was a Renaissance ship?
Just briefly afterwards. After the bankruptcy, the company that took this ship were called Swan Hellenic.
Which is part of P&O at that point.
Yes, actually, P&O had just bought Swan Hellenic.
Yeah. This was the Minerva.
This was the Minerva too.
Oh, I was on that ship.
And I started it.
Oh, my God. And by the way, the Minerva basically boasted that it didn't have a casino. It had a huge library.
It was probably the best educated vessel afloat.
And the most educated passengers.
Yes.
They really wanted to learn.
The whole concept of that ship was cruising and education. It worked very well.
It did. And then this ship, speaking of that, so this ship started out as a Renaissance ship?
It was the R8.
Yep.
As built.
For a very brief period of time.
Yeah, I think something like 6 months.
And then that company went bankrupt.
They built 8 brand new ships, all very similar. And then they went bankrupt after 9/11. Nobody was traveling.
And then that ship became the Minerva.
Became the Minerva 2.
And then
the Royal Princess. Then the Adonia.
And the Adonia, we just did a story on them about a year and a half ago because they were the first U.S.-based cruise line given permission to sail into Cuba.
That's correct. And I think the second ship was the Azamara Quest.
Yes. And then it became part of the Royal Caribbean fleet as an Azamara ship.
Well, we bought this ship in March. We bought it from P&O in international waters. We took the ship to dry dock. We did a full inspection, and we actually took the management of it earlier in March this year.
And this is its first cruise as an Azamara ship.
So we spent 4 months in Belfast under refit, and this is our maiden voyage.
Amazing. And the cool thing about this ship, as opposed to banana boats or the Shell oil tankers, is that you really make a conscious effort of spending some extra nights in port.
Yes. With Azamara Club Cruises, we spend more time in port, I would say, than any other cruise line, including overnights, late departures. We're normally the first ship into port in the morning and the last ship to sail.
I mean, Oslo was great, 24 hours.
Yeah, full 24 hours in Oslo, including an overnight. So it was nice. A lot of our guests got to go offshore and experience the Akebrygge in the evening. Beautiful place.
It is. And the one thing that I know has changed since you started on the cruise ships, we're not talking about 7-day Caribbean cruises anymore. We're talking over 1,000 ports of call.
Here with this little company, we've got 3 ships. I think we're hitting close to 300 different ports of call in a year.
That's the nice thing about this ship. It's not too big. You can get into a lot of ports that other ships don't go to, right? You're more maneuverable.
I wouldn't say we're more maneuverable, but the vessel's dimensions lend it to calling into smaller ports of call. The large ships simply could not come alongside on this berth.
Exactly. And that gives you more options.
It gives us many more options. We can fit everywhere that the big ships can, but also on top of that, we can get into little places like Seville in Spain, which is 50 miles upriver. We go 72 miles up the river into Bordeaux, where we overnight as well.
You better overnight in Bordeaux.
Oh, we overnight in Bordeaux. We're there 3 days and 2 nights as a rule. We can berth in Monaco, in Nice. There are tiny little ports around the Mediterranean where we just fit perfectly.
I know. And you don't need a tug. You have the thrusters, so...
Very rarely use tugs. Ship is maneuverable. It's really only if the weather is very bad that we would require a tug. If it's simply a matter of space, we can do it all on our own.
In your experience on this ship, this is a ship that's 19 years old. It's had 5 or 6 different names, at least 5 or 6 different owners. It feels like a new ship.
We spend a lot of money on it. We spend a lot of money on it. So the idea was to bring it up to the same level as the sister vessels, the Azamara Quest and the Azamara Journey, which have been very well maintained for the last 11 years. And they have had successive upgrades. So when we took this vessel, it had not had the same level of investment, either in the upgrades or in the maintenance. It took us 4 months and some $50 million to bring the ship up to where the sister vessels are.
Wow. But mechanically, it was sound.
Mechanically, it was sound. We've done a lot of work downstairs in the engine room, a lot of work. There were some little bits down there that were better than the sister ships, but there was a lot which needed some work.
So now that's all been brought up to speed.
It's all good now.
Is there a port that you won't go to?
Oh, there's a question. No. I will take the ship pretty much anywhere. I will do due diligence on the research, but providing it's safe, no, I don't have an issue with anywhere.
In your experience, and this goes beyond Azamara at this point, what would you say was your most challenging port?
One port. There are some of the areas of the world which are very difficult to navigate in, but that normally means that I'm having fun.
Because you actually get the drive.
I enjoy the navigation. Norway is challenging, not the most challenging. Then you have the fjords and down in South America, around Chile, Argentina, that's also very challenging. In and out of the islands and the inland sea in Japan. Running the ship.
I've done the inland sea in Japan. It's amazing.
It is amazing. The currents in that area are very strong.
And you wouldn't expect it.
Nobody does until they go there.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we take the ship into Shanghai. We go all the way up to the Bund in Shanghai. An incredible feat of navigation.
So you actually go into the Huangpu River.
We do.
That's unusual. Yeah.
So it's, I think it's something like 68 miles up the Yellow River, and then we turn left and head south.
I have to tell you, I've done that cruise. And when you leave, whether you're leaving during the daytime or at night, you're passing one of the largest navies in the world. And they're there. You see all their ships.
Well, you see not only the naval vessels, but the commercial ships, the commercial tonnage, which is anchored outside Shanghai.
Just waiting to get in.
It can be 15, 20 miles of ship after ship after ship.
I mean, that reminds me of Alexandria in Egypt.
Oh, probably 100 times more so.
Really?
More so.
Amazing. Amazing. So where will you take the ship this year?
This year, our maiden voyage, Norway, you're on it right now.
Right.
Our next cruise goes around Iceland. Then we have our inaugural cruise. We're calling it our naming ceremony cruise, which just runs from Southampton into Cherbourg in France and back again. It's a little 2-day cruise. From there, we're heading south into the Mediterranean. We'll do the whole Mediterranean. We come out, sail across the Atlantic through Miami, the Panama Canal, all the way down the west coast of South America. I'll be on vacation for most of that. I join the ship again in Buenos Aires just before Christmas. And the beginning of next year, we're heading down to Antarctica.
Now, so is this an ice-class ship?
No, we're not an ice-class ship. The trick to navigating in those waters is don't hit anything.
Is that a nautical term you just gave me? Don't hit anything.
It's about the truth of the matter. We will be polar classed at that stage. Yeah. All my officers and indeed myself were undergoing polar navigation training in the next few weeks and few months. The ship is being prepared with all of the additional safety equipment it requires. But we will be fully polar classed, not ice classed, by the time we get down there.
Wow. That'll be fun.
I've been down once before, 11 years ago, on the Azamara journey. It was amazing.
And you made it through the Drake Passage intact.
Drake Passage, you pay your money and you take your chances. That area is probably known for the worst weather in the world. Last time I was down there, it was beautiful.
You got lucky.
I tend to get lucky.
I'm sailing with you.
Well, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
It's safe to say that I call myself an explorer and a traveler, but my next guest is truly an explorer and a traveler because this man is, we have to figure out, we have to get into his mind to figure out exactly why, where, and how, because my hat is off to him as well as other body parts. His name is Fionn Paul. He is an explorer, an athlete, but you have rowed, sir. It's amazing to meet you. How many places have you rowed?
All the major oceans. All four of them. I mean, all four of the so far rowed by whoever, yes.
So you've done the Atlantic?
Atlantic.
Pacific?
Pacific and Indian and the Arctic.
Wow. And by yourself?
Each time in a team, but the team changes each time. I am the only person who rowed all of them.
Right. And how long, let's just start with the Atlantic, mm-hmm. right? How big is the boat?
The boat is around 10 meters long.
So 30 feet?
Yeah, more or less. I mean, ours in particular was 11, but some are even 9 or less, depending on the size of the boat and the size of the crew, the design of the boat. And so
fiberglass?
All sorts of people use fiberglass. They use some older boats are still plywood, and some are aluminium. I mean, all sorts of depending on.
But let's call it what it is: mm-hmm. a 30-foot long boat in a big ocean is a small boat.
That's correct. it's a very small boat,
and you don't have radar.
You have basic AIS, but it's not strong as properly called radar. But it does allow you to communicate and avoid collisions. Obviously, without it, we wouldn't be allowed to set off. And it does its job, let's say.
And yet, for example, today, we're in the ocean right now, and it's a beautiful, calm sea.
That's correct.
Something that you would love to see.
Right. I would love to see when I'm rowing, but I'm not often that privileged. And, of course, we choose routes that are aligned with the weather patterns because it's very difficult to go completely against it.
Sometimes you don't have a choice.
Sometimes I don't have a choice. On the Arctic Ocean, we were going 60% of the time against the weather, which was the biggest battle probably ever. And that also validates the effort that we made.
Of course.
Because you can drift on the ocean, but you can also row through hardships of it.
So let me ask you a couple of questions. First, how long did it take you to do the Arctic?
There were two expeditions combined, and the first took 9 days, and the second took 13 days.
That's actually shorter than I thought.
Yes, because it was with an absolutely record-breaking speed. We broke the Arctic Ocean overall speed record by 3.5 times. That would mean that if we did it by the old standards, it would have been not 22 days, but 70 days.
Wow.
Yes.
So how fast were you going?
We were going 2.7 knots and keeping now, in mind.
By the way, 2.7 knots doesn't sound fast, but to sustain that speed is pretty amazing.
Well, if we keep in mind that the previous record was 0.7 knots,
that was
the biggest record-breaking achievement in the history of the sport.
No kidding. Okay, now really impressed me, the Atlantic.
Atlantic, 32 days.
Oh, 32 days.
Right. But
and how many hours a day? I'm asking silly questions here, but but how many hours a day are you actually rowing?
We are actually rowing all the time, but because we are alternating shifts, we row half-time each. So 2 hours on, 2 hours off is the typical pattern. So 12 hours a day is the norm.
Wow. So now, you know, one of your specialties, of course, is psychology.
That's correct.
You have to get into a mindset. You have to get into an amazing mindset to be able to concentrate and not wander and not get crazy.
That's one thing.
What do you think about when you're out there?
I think it is more about maintaining your functionality, not even thinking about anything in particular, because every of your resistant thresholds is crossed long ago and you have to keep going. So it's more like just holding on. There are beautiful days where you can sort of drift in your mind and think about something, but there are days when you just have to keep focused on goal and keep going.
I have to tell you, if I put myself in your position on that small boat, I would probably become delirious in about a day.
Maybe not in about a day, but typically delirium comes after a few days. That's correct. I have experienced it on every single row.
You have?
Yes, because of the amount of effort and the amount of sleep deprivation, and that's pretty a norm. But it wouldn't come sooner than after a few days. Yeah, it needs to.
But it's coming. But it's there.
Yes, it's there. It's there. And the scary nature of delirium is that you cannot easily distinguish it from reality. So
I have a lot of friends like that, and they're not rowing.
Well, that's the point.
It is. But still, you know it's coming. So how do you fight against it?
You basically go along with it as long as you don't do anything
stupid
or wrong. It's fine.
Have you ever been scared?
Yes, I've been scared many times for many reasons, not only delirium, but also the natural phenomenons or animals. So whale lifted our boat once, walrus came close to our boat. We were in severe delirium. I've been on the edge of making some major mistakes. And so I'm scared each time. I mean, if I had no fear at all, it would be
Yes.
If you are continuing on to another Southwest destination, please make sure that you check the monitors inside the terminal for your proper gate and flight information. If you are continuing on with another airline, we really don't care.
I am a passenger.
Audible.com has more than 150,000 titles and virtually every genre. So check it out for yourself. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial. Every ship has people who work on the ship who tell interesting stories, who bring a different thing to the party. And of course, one of them is always the cruise director. One of them is always the show runner and chief storyteller. Joining me now, the cruise director on this ship, Amanda Paulson. How are you?
Hello, very well.
And if truth be told, I just discovered this, a Madison, Wisconsin native. And we always shout out to Madison, Wisconsin because, of course, I went to school there. But that has no bearing at all on the fact that she's on the show. I just discovered that.
Go Badgers.
Yeah. How has the role of cruise director? I remember when I took my first cruise back in the 70s, you know, that was still in the age of the Love Boat, that was still in the age of first and second seating, that was still in the age of you had a juggler on the boat and you had one Broadway show review and that was it. Things have changed.
Very much, yes. Especially here on Azamara, the role of cruise director, we also are performers. That's part of our background. We have to have our own show that we do throughout the cruise. We also, usually we're singers. We sing throughout the events, so we're part of the live
music set. So you are a singing cruise director.
I am a singing cruise director. My background is as a production show singer. That's how I started at sea.
And when did you start singing?
I started singing as a very small child back in Madison, Wisconsin.
Madison, Wisconsin. I knew we'd have to come full circle back
yep,
in Madison.
Yeah, absolutely. Did the high school musicals and worked my... I got my degree in music from University of Wisconsin as well.
All right. Well, now that you're a Badger, you can stay on the show. And you sing on the show, but you also sing back in Madison, don't you?
I do, yes. When I get the chance, I'm actually going to be doing a show back home after this contract. But I sing... I just was home and did the UW band show this year.
And for those of you who don't know, the UW band is probably the best college college band in America.
Definitely.
And if you ever attended a Big Ten football game at Camp Randall Stadium in Madison, you're in for a treat whether the Badgers win or lose because, and back, by the way, when I went to Madison, we never won. We had the worst record ever. We went like 0-14. And yet, we all stayed after the game for the fifth quarter,
yep.
which is when the band performed, and we knew that was always going to be a winner.
Absolutely. It's still going strong.
Yeah, and now, of course, we're winning, and we have a winning band, so there's another reason to go. But back then, the only reason to go was the band. It's true. So what are you singing on the ship?
The show that I do here is a combination. I do some classical music, some classic musical theater, some contemporary Broadway. It's just sort of a songs that everyone likes to hear kind of a show.
But your challenge as a cruise director is not to sing. Your challenge as a cruise director is to keep it all going.
Keep it all going. Make sure everyone is having a great time, that they've got great entertainment, that they have fun activities, and to essentially host the ship.
What's your biggest challenge, though?
Wow, that's a very good question. My biggest challenge right now is I have stepped into the shoes of cruise director. I am the assistant cruise director, so I am currently filling in. My role is to assist, and then I'm supposed to step up. But
so now you're doing everything.
I'm doing everything, yes. Yeah, our cruise director, unfortunately, had to have emergency surgery.
Ah.
Yes.
Well, let's and I hope he gets better.
Oh, yeah, he's doing just fine. He's just resting and recovering from eyes.
Got it. Well, let's talk about challenges. I mean, I used to laugh about the stupidest questions ever asked by cruise ship passengers.
Oh, there's some great ones.
I mean, the ones that I remember, of course, are, you know, like, what time is the midnight buffet?
Mm-hmm.
Or do the waiters sleep on board?
Oh, yes.
Right?
Do these stairs go up or down? I have actually heard that question.
The one that I always loved is the woman who walked out on deck and saw the pool and said, was there salt water or fresh water in the pool? And they said, oh, it's salt water. And she says, oh, that explains why it's like sloshing around. That was a good one. The best one of all was not a stupid question. It was a stupid comment.
Hmm.
I was 20 years ago on the inaugural cruise of the Grand Princess, which was built in Italy for Princess. And we were sailing as the inaugural cruise into Venice. And this ship towered over everything in Venice. It was just a little scary. I mean, we're higher than the tower in St. Mark's Square.
So beautiful.
But as we're coming in very slowly into the harbor, these two little blue-haired ladies were standing on the deck. And they had their guidebook open. And one looks to the other and goes, I didn't know they had a doggy palace here. Oh, my goodness. I wonder what kind of dog.
Oh, the
The Doge's Palace. Oh. She says, what kind of doggies do you think they have in that palace? Oh. I want to go see those. You think they have poodles? You think they have dachshunds? I'm like sitting there going, I do not believe this. And I didn't have the heart to tell them. I just couldn't do it.
That's fantastic. I'm going to retell that story. That's
brilliant. It's an absolutely true story.
You know, the question that we do get a lot is, do people actually live on board? And it sounds like a silly question, but I went on a cruise while I was in rehearsals, and I thought to myself, does everyone actually live on board? Because I'd never worked on board. And it is a very natural question to ask, because when you look around at how many people are working, at the housekeeping staff, the bar teams, the entertainment teams, it almost seems impossible that there could be that many people behind the scenes making everything happen. I found myself having the exact same reaction on my first cruise.
But you've now figured that out, haven't
you? Absolutely. There's a whole world that is behind the scenes. It's really an amazing system.
I'm a big back of the house fan. I love process. So if you ask kids where food comes from, they tell you the store. I have a problem with that. I think that the cruise lines would be better off at least inviting some of their key passengers downstairs into the crew galley and to hang out, because you guys have the best parties anyway.
Oh, well, there's that, yeah. But
You have the best parties.
But the mechanics behind the scenes are really amazing. We do, here on Azamara, we do offer, there are tours that people can take that will take you through the galley, through the crew mess that takes you down what we call the I-95, which is
right.
The main corridor that everything moves back and forward on the ship that's behind the scenes. But
right.
It's an amazing machine working.
Do passengers get to eat in the crew galley?
No.
Never?
I don't think so.
Not
I mean, it
good.
May have happened and I don't know about it, but
because you got the best food down there.
We do have great food. They take very good care of us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because what people don't realize, this is what most people don't realize. What's your contract? You're here. How you're on? It's not like you go home every weekend.
No. People sign on. It depending on what job they're doing.
Is it
there
like
are
three months on, 6 months on?
Some people have contracts. I've had contracts when I was in the production cast that were 8 months on board
with no days off.
The production cast has a lighter schedule, but there are some people who are here for 6 months with no days off. days off. Yeah, it's there's always something happening. And on turnaround day, people sign off the ship and go home, and they think, oh, now they get a break. But the second everyone leaves, we turn everything around and we set sail again the next night with a whole new group of passengers. So it's a continuous machine. It's really, really amazing.
You have to have a certain mindset in order to do this job then, because, you know, it's not like you get to go home at night.
No, but we do. And especially I have noticed here with my years at Azamara, it really and truly is a family. The crew, everyone knows everyone's name. Everyone knows.
By the way, that could be a bad thing.
Oh, no. No, it's one of the things that I love the most about here is when I sign on board, hello, Amanda. Good to see you, Amanda. And it's not because of the role that I have on board. It is because we all know each other and care about each other and look out for each other.
Now, before you did this job, you'd never been to sea, really, right?
Never. I'd never been on a cruise until I started working at sea.
Wow. And you've adapted okay?
I did my first contract, went home, sold my house, put all my stuff that was personal in a storage unit, and never looked back. I love it at sea.
So when you do go home, where do you go home to?
Well, my parents are still in Madison, so that's always my
Good
first
choice.
Stop.
Yes.
I go get my deep-fried cheese curds. My sister is in Appleton, so I go up there and visit her, and then I kind of bounce around the country visiting all the people that I don't get to see because I work on a ship. And then when I'm done visiting all my friends and family, it's time to go back to work.
So essentially you're homeless.
Yes.
I just want to make sure we got this covered.
Right, yeah. Now my home is the beautiful Azamara Pursuit, so I'm doing okay.
Right, but bottom line is, if somebody wants to mail you a letter, where do they send it?
They can send it through crew mail, but it'll take a while to get to me. So luckily we have email. That's the main way that I communicate.
But that's it.
That's it, yep.
Wow.
It's a strange and wonderful way to live your life. I wouldn't change a thing.
Your family's back in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Are you single, married?
I have a boyfriend. He lives in Canada.
Wait a second, but he's not here.
He's not here, no.
This is a truly long-distance relationship.
Yes, yes. He will be coming to visit the ship in September.
And where did you meet him?
I met him on a ship.
There we go. I knew that was coming.
Yeah, yeah, he and I worked together on the Allure of the Seas.
Oh, for Royal Caribbean.
For Royal Caribbean.
Which is actually the parent corporation of Azamara.
Yep.
Wow, see, so there are benefits here.
Oh, absolutely.
And he gets to cruise with you?
Yes, he does.
Wow.
Wonderful.
And what does he do?
When I met him on the ship, he was a scuba diving instructor, and now he's a wildland firefighter.
Woo.
Yeah, so he's off the grid as well right now. So
I'm sure they're very busy right
now.
Yes. It's been a tough, very tough year for everybody.
Yeah.
What's the one thing that people should know before they ever take a cruise?
I think there, as you said, there's a great misconception about cruising. There's some people have that sort of 70s love boat mentality, and it really is a wonderful way to travel that is far more modern than I think people realize. The food is on par with top restaurants that you'll find in any vacation destination. And especially with Azamara, some people think, oh, if I'm going to go visit a place, I don't want to go by cruise ship because you only get a few hours. We pull in, we stay, we have overnights. I have seen...
You see, that's the one thing I have to say you guys get a big kudo from me on, because I don't really like the idea of the traditional 7-day Caribbean cruise where, you know, you're in at 8 in the morning, you're gone at 5.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that doesn't... You can't catch your breath.
Yep.
We go to Oslo on this trip and we're going to overnight. We're going to be there 24 hours, which is like... Cool.
Yep.
You know, you get to hang out.
We really, our goal on Azamara is the destination immersion. And it is a wonderful way. You can unpack once. You have you've got a beautiful roof over your head, but you're going to get out and see amazing destinations. Riding along in my automobile. My baby beside me at the wheel. Cruising and playing the radio.
With no particular place to go. Joining me now, someone who's been on these ships for how many years?
Well, I guess if I'm counting well, 24.
24. He's the hotel director who's got the second most challenging job on the ship, I think. Rashad Guzman, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Peter. Thank
you
for
having me.
How
long have you been with Azamara now?
Well, since day number one, I was privileged to open Azamara Journey in 2007. And since then, yeah, here I am. I'm still here.
And before, I love the genealogy. And before then?
And before then, I worked for bigger ships, for bigger companies, like Celebrity Cruise Line, Royal Caribbean. And then before that...
The big red ships.
Big red ships, exactly. So
Premier Cruise Lines.
Premier Cruise Line, yeah. The Oceanic and famous Atlantic I was working on.
And those
on.
Ships are no longer with us. I think they've been broken up.
Unfortunately, yes. When Disney showed up with the beautiful ships...
They put them out of business.
Put them out of business, yes.
Exactly. But what's distinguishing Azamara is your smaller ships, you're going to different ports, You have a different approach to those ports because you're spending some overnights, which is really great, right?
That's great, that advantage of it, yes.
But let's talk about the interior of the ships, because that's really your baby in terms of the hotel aspect of the ships, right?
That's correct.
What are you doing different on this ship?
What we do different on the ship, well, you know, based on my experience, what I've seen in the past and what we're doing here, we're very much paying attention to details, and that will be with everything, from interior, from the cleanliness to service. So basically, we're very much out there with the guests. We're spending lots of time with the guests. We're basically facing guests every day, so there's no hiding here. We are too small to hide. But that's a big difference between being on a smaller ship or bigger ship. Basically, the frequency of seeing guests here and on the bigger ships is much, much bigger.
But it's also, you know, if you take a look at what guests spend their time doing on a cruise ship, at least one third of the time is eating.
That will be my guess too. But our concept is slightly different. Well, of course, the eating still, but our concept is to make sure that we provide with the destinations so they spend more time actually ashore than to being on a ship. But of course, we are like small boutique floating hotel that they're coming back to and have a nice meal at the end of the day.
And speaking of that meal, when you're in certain ports, you can locally source stuff that you couldn't get anywhere else.
Well, I'm the happiest, I think, hotel director ever, because they gave me a budget, imagine, to actually spend money, and I love to spend money. I usually say that about my wife, but I love to spend money too. It is great, actually, privilege to work for them, because for Azamara Cruise Line, just because there is actually budget to daily go outside and source for the fresh products. Today, you have an example of being in Norway. We're taking advantage of the fresh market, fish market. We're buying smoked salmon. We're buying oysters that will be presented and, of course, served to the guests this evening.
And, you know, we talk about smoked salmon in the States. There's a difference between smoked salmon in the States and smoked salmon here. They really smoke it here.
I think they do. And you have two types of smoked salmon here in Norway, cold smoke and hot smoke, which is a big difference, by the way, if you have a chance to compare these two. But like I said, this is a fresh source. This is the source you want to get salmon from.
And you can taste the difference immediately.
I would definitely say yes.
I mean, I hate to use these two words, but it's true, like butter. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I would even call it melt in your mouth, definitely, because it's so smooth and so nice to eat that, you know, yeah, you don't feel it, almost as butter.
In your experience as a hotel director on this and other ships, what's been the biggest change in passenger demand? What are they looking for now that they weren't looking for before?
You know, that's a very good question. And I think from our experience here on Azamara, we do have very experienced cruisers, I call them. So these guests who we are caring for on board Azamara ships,
they come with other expectations.
And they've done a lot. So they've done bigger ships, they've done smaller ships. They come in here, first of all, for the small ships, but they come in here for destinations as well. Very experienced guests.
Okay, so what are they asking for?
They're asking for everything at the end of the day, but, you know, we are here to provide them the service. I wouldn't see any difference between bigger ships and smaller ships in regards to the questions, but they may be demanding in regards to more personal approach to their experience.
I mean, they know, or they think they know, right? We've gone beyond the days of first and second seating. Those days are over, right?
And I hope it will cascade to different ships too. I know bigger ships are not maybe capable to do the same thing because they are just too large to proceed with the open seatings. But again, open seating, this is the way to do it. That's flexibility you're giving to the guests, especially with the destination immersion concept. You definitely give the flexibility here.
And then on the overnights, they got a chance to take their time.
Well, I'll just give you an example. You've been to Venice, correct?
Yeah.
Well, go to Venice during the day and during the evening time.
Two different cities.
A huge difference. And if you don't spend time in the evening in Venice,
you miss out.
You have to come back. Well, with us, you don't need to come back because we're staying two nights.
I'm coming with you. I love two nights.
Totally.
Hello and welcome to Alaska Flight 438. We'd like to tell you now about some important safety features of this aircraft. The most important safety feature we have aboard this plane is the flight attendants. Please look at one now. But I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500 more than be the man who walks 1,000 miles to fall down at your door.
As many of you know who've taken a cruise, eating and food are a major component part of the cruise experience, and it's gotten so much better over the last 5 to 10 years. simply because there's been a food explosion on land, and people are coming on ships with much higher expectations and much, much bigger demands for a wider variety of food. Well, that may explain, of course, why there's so many specialty restaurants on cruise ships now, because people are looking for more than just the main dining room or, in the old days, first or second seating. Joining me now, the executive chef on the Pursuit, Monica Ortiz. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
A Mexican-American from Texas.
Can't go wrong there, right?
No. Is there Mexican food on board?
We do a few things here and there for lunch, and usually our dinners are themed dinners, so usually around lunchtime we do that.
Right, but obviously you've got to cater to everybody's tastes.
Correct.
So bottom line is, what have you been able to bring to this ship? You've been on these ships now for, what, 8 years now?
Yes.
So how have you seen the food tastes of the passengers changed, and then what they're asking you to do?
Well, I guess as you mentioned earlier, food has evolved on land, and so we try to... What's special about cruise ships is that we travel all over the world. So we have this Cruise Global Savor Local. So we try to bring local dishes on board. And I think that's what we've really tried to implement within the last couple of years.
And of course, so much of travel is storytelling. You can tell the story of the local dishes.
Right, right, right.
And how they became what they are. So in one of the ports, I think you and I are going to go shopping maybe in the fish market and figure out how to cook it.
Yes, we can do that. It's one of our tours that we offer our guests sometimes, depending on the cruise, and if there's a nice market that we could visit, we'll take our guests out, we'll go shopping.
But as a matter of general practice, you do source a lot of stuff locally.
Yes, we try to. We try to promote local items. We have several purveyors throughout the world that we are familiar with. And
so let me guess, on this trip, will there be an abundance of herring?
Yes, there will be. We have a Baltic seafood buffet a few days from now, and we will have all kinds of salmon and herrings and
different kinds of sauces.
Norwegian sausages. So,
oh my God,
lots of fun and interesting things.
What's your biggest? You know, in the old days, when you talked about, you know, when I would talk to a head of food for an airline, they would tell me, "Oh my God, we have so many problems because we're at altitude. We can't make a souffle. It won't, you know, it'll fall down." Now they can. They figured out the technology that you can even do a souffle at 35,000 feet. What are the challenges that you have here that you wouldn't necessarily have on land?
I think our biggest challenge has to be that we cook everything with electric. Everything is electrical here. We don't have an open flame. We're not allowed to have open flame in our galley just right. Because of safety
of
purposes. So that's a downfall for us. However, I guess
because you like cooking with gas.
Of course, everybody does. But the past couple of years, we have this beautiful grill now that's more of a char grill that we have, and that's something that we didn't have in the past.
And what does that allow you to do?
It allows us to cook and grill meats the way you would at home, or as if it was on a grill outside.
Are you smoking any of your own stuff here?
We do have a smoker that we do have.
Wow.
That we have the wooden chips as well. So we do have that, and we play around with that.
And what about barbecue?
Oh, we do have an outdoor...
I mean, come on, we're talking Texas here. Come on.
Yeah, we do several barbecues. We'll do some in the afternoon, and then we have a white night buffet where we offer lobster and all kinds of things like that. We grill outside.
But electric, too?
No, we have Weber grills.
Oh,
so
the Webers.
We do have charcoal on those days. We make an exception. We have fire extinguishers around, and we do a few barbecues throughout the cruise.
From the meat and potatoes days to where we are today, how many different kinds of cuisine will be served on a 7-day cruise?
Well, every night we have a theme buffet, so that's a different type of cuisine every evening. But our Discoveries menu, we have a 14-day menu cycle, and you will notice in each menu that we have Mediterranean food, American food. It's a combination of different types of cuisines. You'll see Singapore dishes, so just a little bit of everything.
Now, in the old days of cruising, and I'm talking 25 years ago, if you wanted the best meal on the ship, you'd go down to the Chinese Laundry. And those guys are making their own food down there. And oh my God, the best Asian food ever.
Well, right? We do have a crew galley, and we cater to our crew's cultures. So we'll have a Filipino dish, an Indian dish. There's rice for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So we do cater to everybody's liking down there.
Every once in a while, you should ask the passengers to come down to the crew galley. It'd be the best thing they ever did.
Oh, we do have passengers that prefer, that request our Indian food down in the crew galley. Because
see, the smart guys
they
know
like
where to go.
We have several guests that like Indian food.
All right,
so.
Last question, which I always ask every chef who's on the show. What's the one item you put on the menu that you thought, wow, everybody's going to love this, and it tanked? And then what's the one item you said,
who's going to order this and everybody had to have it?
I would have to say on both, it would probably be oysters because we always have our seafood buffet on the first day of the cruise. And I always order about 200 pieces of oysters. And it depends on the crowd. Some guests like fresh oysters, some guests don't. So 200, 250 pieces for our cruise ship should be enough.
I've scored.
Right.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Catch us each week as we broadcast from a new location somewhere around the world.